The following podcast is brought to you by Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. Jump on Amazon.ca today and get your free sample of the best-selling ebook in Unexplained Mysteries.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast Esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of April 2016. And guys, it's with a heavy heart that I do have some bad news I have to share with you guys right off the top of this podcast. And I know it's something you probably don't want to hear, but I think it's important that I tell you guys up front. You know, for the better part of 2 years now, I've been putting out these shows, and I'll be honest, with this new addition to my family, this new little boy I've got, my family, my job, things are just getting harder and harder and harder to do. So it's with a very heavy heart that I have to tell you guys that this will be my final podcast for the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. And I will finally be dumping my time into something I feel I should be dumping it more into. And that, my friends, is to go to clown college and become the next Bozo the Clown. Happy April Fools, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that little rant. Do you really think I'd give this up now? No way. Sure, I just hit 10,000 downloads on Podbean, man. I'm so happy about that. I'm never going to give up this podcast. This is a part of me now. Yeah, I guess you guys are going to be stuck with me after all. Guys, welcome to the show. This is the first show. I swear to God, I really am not quitting, by the way. That was just a joke. I'm going to keep on doing these shows because I enjoy them. A little later in the show, I'm going to be joined by Garnett Schulhauser to talk all about astral projection, which is just, well, really, really, really far out there. It's a strange conversation. It's my second one with the man, and let me tell you, I think you guys are going to really, really enjoy it. If you're into the paranormal, obviously you'll love my show anyway, but if you're into astral projection, this is definitely a must hear. Garnett is a really, really awesome guest, and we had a lot of fun. Guys, I'm going to go ahead and throw it at you. It's been a very, very busy time in my life right now, and there's absolutely no doubt that I don't have a whole lot of time to be dumping into my podcast like I'd like to dump into, but I want to thank everybody out there who is listening. Thank you so much. I hit that 10,000 mark on Podbean the other day, man, and it just brightened my day. It really, really did, and I just want to let you guys know that I have no idea of knowing how many people are actually listening to this podcast. I have no idea. There could be thousands. There could be a couple of hundred on different sites. I know I'm registered on almost, I believe last I counted was 80, about 80 different host sites. So I have no idea knowing, you know, how many hits I actually get. iTunes in particular, you know, and I know every other podcaster out there right now are nodding their head going, yep, Johnny, you're right. There's no way of knowing how many hits you have on Podbean or on iTunes. So what can I say? Let's just keep this up. I know that things are going really, really well, and I'm really, really happy with the way things are with my podcast. I couldn't be happier with those numbers, and let me tell you, whether 10 people listen to this show or 10,000 every single night, I'm just really, really happy to be a part of your lives, even if it is part of your background noise, so to speak. Well, guys, what can I say? Man, oh man, March was full of paranormal news, and we're going to go ahead and dig right on in. This first story takes me all the way back to kindergarten when we used to sing about Noah's Ark and all the different animals on it. And there was one in particular that just did not make the ride, and that was the unicorn. Mainly because, you know, we didn't really believe it existed. But guess what? Yeah. Prehistoric unicorn lived alongside humans. This is one to really get your creature feature going. A large horned beast known as a Siberian unicorn could be the origin of the modern unicorn legend. Originally thought to have died out 350,000 years ago, Elasmotherium cerebricarium would have been a sight to behold, a horned behemoth standing 6 feet tall and measuring up to 15 feet in length. Now, scientists have found new evidence to suggest that this unicorn-like creature may have actually survived until as recently as 26,000 years ago, meaning that it would have lived alongside modern humans for many thousands of years. The discovery was made after fossil fragments were unearthed in Kazakhstan, where an isolated population was thought to have survived long after the species had gone extinct everywhere else. Many researchers believe that the early findings of the fossil may have been the origin of the mythical unicorn, a theory seemingly backed up by the early paleontologists who had heard stories from men in Siberia about a unicorn with a horn so large that it needed a sledge to move it. Whether the legends really did originate with these remarkable beasts, however, remains unclear. But what is known is that these are very rare and very real creatures, and that as the global climate changed, they were driven into a smaller and smaller areas until they eventually disappeared entirely. Understanding of the past allows us to make more accurate predictions about natural processes in the near future, said Dr. Andrei Shemsky. It also concerns climate change. So there you go, guys. The real live story of a unicorn that actually existed. Man, oh man. I tell you, if I see a unicorn, I don't know. I don't even know what to say. It's just pretty wild to think that they even existed. But this creature, this has a horn. It looks a lot like a horse. I mean, go figure. If it really was alive during our, during our ancestors' time, it really could be the origin of the story of the unicorn. I guess they'd have to rewrite that Noah's Ark song after all. I tell you what, if I seen a unicorn, I'd probably soil myself. Well, that may soon not even be a problem anymore. Self-cleaning clothes could soon be available to the common man. Researchers are developing clothes that can be cleaned simply by exposing them to a light source. The idea of clothes that have never been washed or cleaned might sound like something out of a science fiction movie, but now thanks to the efforts of scientists at the University in Australia, this futuristic concept may actually be closer to becoming reality than you may think. The key to the technology lies in growing tiny nanostructures on the fabric which, when exposed to light sources, cause any organic matter on the clothing surface to degrade. Basically, what we do is take a simple cotton textile. We have a few different new methodologies to grow nanostructures directly on them. And then once these structures are formed, we can just shine light on them, said Dr. Rajesh Ramanathan. The technology could prove invaluable in hospitals where this unique cell-cleaning mechanism could help to prevent the spread of infections, especially superbugs. In fields like biology or antibacterial textiles, one of the problems the entire world is facing is superbugs. It's very difficult to kill them or to get rid of them and to stop their spread, said Dr. Ramathan. So one of the potential aspects of the material is that we have started testing it on superbugs and it's showing amazing results. So there you go, guys. Maybe someday we'll never have to wash our clothes. Oh, man. Well, I know one thing. The farther we go with technology, the more we discover. This next thing just blows my mind how it's even possible. Scientists have discovered plastic-eating bacteria. For the first time ever, a species of bacteria has been found that can break down common plastics. Landfills overflowing with non-degradable materials have been a growing concern in recent years, but now it seems as though nature might have actually found a way to fight back. Researchers in Japan recently conducted a study in which they sifted through hundreds of samples of polyethylene tetraflate, or PET, pollution before identifying a colony of bacteria that appeared to have developed special enzymes capable of breaking the plastic down. It's the first time that such an organism has been found, and it's believed to have been emerged in direct response to the amount of plastic we've been dumping over the last 70 years. If you put a bacteria in a situation where they've only got one food source to consume, over time they will adapt to that, said microbiology professor Enzo Palumbo. Known as Aedilinella saccharinensis, the bacteria are able to degrade low-quality PET plastics within just 6 weeks. Not bad considering how strongly the molecules in polyester are bonded together. Until recently, no organisms were known to be able to decompose it, said Professor Iwi Broshnor. While the discovery is certainly an intriguing one, it isn't clear just yet whether these new bacteria can be harnessed in any way to help dispose of plastics or other materials very efficiently. Ultimately, the most effective tactic is to simply avoid dumping the plastics in the first place. Well, there you go, guys. Reduce, reuse, or recycle. Or maybe nature just might eat it all up. Very, very odd indeed. Almost as odd as this. Did you know there's actually a new study floating around, and I was actually pretty excited to say this one. But did you know that 60% of widowed people see lost loved ones? Yeah, this was a new study. It was done in Italy, and it suggests that it's not uncommon to see, hear, or sense a deceased partner. Paranormal experiences involving a deceased loved one are not as uncommon as most people would believe. That is according to researchers at the University of Milan, who conducted an extensive study into cases of post-bereavement hallucinatory experiences. I know, guys, there's just a lot of these tonight. Let's just call them PBHEs for short. Overall, evidence suggests a strikingly high prevalence of PBHEs ranging from 30 to 60% among widowed subjects, giving consistence to and legitimacy to these phenomena, they wrote. Jacqueline Hayes of the University of Roehampton, who has always studied the phenomenon for several years, prefers to use the term experiences of continued presence. People report visions, voices, tactile sensations, smells, and something that we call a sense of presence that is not necessarily related to any of the five senses, she said. They happen involuntarily and, for example, not while someone is deliberately remembering. They are always significant to the bereaved and continue some aspect of the relationship with a loved one. Sometimes they almost magnify it. While it isn't clear exactly what has taken place during these experiences, some researchers believe that they may be similar to the flashbacks reported by sufferers of post-traumatic stress disorder. Dr. Hayes, on the other hand, maintains that there's something more going on than meets the eye. ECPs can occur for many years afterwards, and even when the bereaved are no longer experiencing trauma, they're usually not in the form of flashbacks but can be quite new experiences and very vivid, she said. Whether they are helpful or unhelpful depends on the nature of the relationship with the deceased. So there you go. I mean, do you guys believe that when someone passes away, they might still be lingering around, kind of hanging around, giving you little signs? I'm telling you, man, I've had people in my family pass away, and I'm telling you 100% from the bottom of my heart, the absolute truth. I know that there's been weird stuff going on. So it just begs the question, you know, if you were to pass on and you had a way to communicate, how would you do so? And if you could, would you do something that only the person you know who cares about you would be able to understand? You know, maybe playing your favorite songs on the radio, something like that. So I don't know. Personally, as someone who investigates paranormal all the time, I think it's very, very possible. And I think that we are still linked in the mind of people who are passed away. There's no doubt about that. No doubt about that. Anyway, let's stop talking about dead people and let's start talking about fictional people. Well, so we thought they were anyway. Were the hobbits wiped out by modern man? New evidence has indicated that Homo floresiens may have died out shortly after Homo sapiens arrived. Evidence of the mysterious Hobbits of Flores, an island in Indonesia, was first unearthed in a cave back in 2003, a discovery that would go on to become a topic of much controversy and debate. New scientists from Lakehead University in Ontario have revealed that Homo floresiens may have disappeared from the island far earlier than previously suggested, pushing their extinction back from 12,000 years ago to around 50,000 years ago. At the time of the initial discovery, not enough of the older deposits had been exposed, and this led to an error in the interpretation of how the dates obtained at the time applied to the sediments that contained the Hobbit remains, said study co-author Matthew Tuchery. These revised dates means that Homo floresiens would have disappeared at the same time as modern humans arrived on the scene, something that could be more than just a coincidence. There is this pattern where ancient kinds of Homo that have been doing perfectly well for a very long time disappear as soon as Homo sapiens show up, said paleoanthropologist Ian Tattersall. For one reason or another, Homo sapiens is an insuperable competitor. Might be the fact that we like to kill things and collect it. Good Lord, I just wish someone would be able to go back in a time machine and figure all this out. But all I'm going to say is this. The fact that we discovered small humans does not surprise me. The fact that they all died out the moment my species came about does not surprise me in the least. I mean, good Lord. If someone's smaller than us, we're going to pick on them. It's just in our nature. You know what? I think we learned something from the story. As a species in whole, we're horrible. We're horrible people. Oh, my. Guys, there was prehistoric unicorns who lived with us side by side thousands of years ago. There's self-cleaning clothes out now that you don't even have to wash anymore. There's plastic-eating bacteria. That's something to be real proud of. 60% of widow people actually still hear from their deceased loved ones. And there's a good chance that we actually wiped out one of the main characters from The Lord of the Rings, The Hobbits. Guys, all these stories have been odd to Newfoundland.
Thank God. It's time for oddities.
Alive! It's alive! It's alive!
Boy, that escalated quickly.
I want to believe.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
Oddity.
Ah. Welcome back, guys. All right, it's time for oddities. I love this part of the show. Remember, 10 very true facts about our weird, odd world. Okay, here it goes. Fact number one. Did you know that peanuts are one of the main ingredients in dynamite? Yeah, think about that next time you're chewing in. Did you know the average chocolate bar has 8 insect legs in it? Yeah, by accident. Apparently they get grinded up and put in there by accident sometimes. Did you know in York, it is perfectly legal to shoot a Scotsman with a bow and arrow, except on Sundays? Those poor, poor Scotsmen. Did you know no piece of square, dry paper can be folded in half more than 7 times? Go ahead, try it out. Grab a piece of paper, as long as it's dry, and give it a shot. We're waiting. Keep going. And let's go on to the next oddity. The average human eats 8 spiders in their lifetime at night. 8 spiders? I ate. Oh my god. Ugh. That's disgusting. That's terrible. I don't know how I feel about these oddities. They're not really doing it for me tonight. Okay, let's talk about Beetham Tower. Oh yeah, that's an oddity in itself. The Beetham Tower cost over $150 million to build. And it also has 47 floors. Wow, that is huge. Stewardesses is the longest word typed with only the left hand. I know you're all trying to do that right now. Save your right hand. Do it all with the left. There's a masturbation joke in here somewhere. An average human loses about 200 head hairs per day. You know what? I believe that, man. Especially with my wife, because I'm telling you, there's times I'm at work and I'm finding her hair all over me. Did you know Mexico City sinks about 10 inches a year? Wow. Si, senor. We are sinking all the time. It's impossible to sneeze with your eyes open. That's actually one I did know. I actually knew that because, you know, I sneeze all the time and I've never seen anybody's reaction when I do it. Okay, one last oddity for you guys before we go on with our guest. In France, a 5-year-old child can buy an alcoholic drink in a bar. A 5-year-old child. Wow. That means Faith could buy a drink in a bar. Oh, guys. Anyway, I had a lot of fun with these oddities. It's on with the show. Let's get Garnet Schulhauser on the line.
The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal podcast does not accept donations. In lieu of this, the Stella Burry Foundation is a registered charity established in 2005 to secure financial support for the work of Stella's Circle. Learn more and please give generously at stellaburry.ca. And now, back to the show.
And welcome back to the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. My guest tonight, of course, is a returning guest. I'm very happy to have him back again. He, of course, is somebody who I'm very familiar with because I actually read his 2 books he put out previously, Dancing on a Stamp and Dancing Forever with Spirit. Here to promote his brand new book, Dance of Heavenly Bliss, Mr. Astral Projection himself, Mr. Michael Garnet. Michael Schulhauser, so happy to have you back on the show, Garnet. Thanks for returning. And I think the fans are going to love this as well.
Thank you, Jonathan, for having me back. I'm delighted to be here again.
Man, I'm telling you, I'm really pumped to hear from you again. And the reason why, I cannot wait to hear what Albert got in store now. Now, for all those people out there who do not know, Albert is a very, very important soul, so to speak, in Garnet's life. He is a spirit guide. And with this new book, I'm not going to give it away for my audience. I'm just going to go ahead and say it. I'm very excited to hear where the heck he's taking you this time, because let me tell you, the last 2 books were quite a trip.
Well, he didn't disappoint me this time either, Jonathan, and he took me on a whole new series of astral trips, which are I described in my 3rd book, and so I met a number of very interesting people on the spirit side. I went to different planets to meet civilizations there. I met some fabled creatures from Earth's legends on Earth, one in America, one in Ireland, so it's a very interesting set of trips. And Albert did this, of course, as you know, like for my 2nd book. He wasn't there to entertain me or to satisfy my curiosity. He wanted me to see sights and talk to people that I could write about in my book, so that we could all learn a lesson from what I saw, or perhaps receive a nugget of wisdom from Albert, who's a very wise soul. So anyway, very exciting adventures. I was happy to chronicle them in my 3rd book, which has just been released, and happy to talk about it tonight here.
And you know, I feel like it's so great to have you back on the show, because it truly is a continuation of your story and your own spiritual development. I kind of feel that the first book, Dancing on a Stamp, was really getting to know Albert and wrapping our minds around the idea that we all have spirit guide and spirit guides, some of us have, and we learned that as well. And then you had Dancing Forever with Spirit, which was kind of a continuation where you delve deeper, really just deeper into, you know, astral projection and different things. But where does Dance of Heavenly Bliss bring us? I mean, in my mind, it can only be a continuation, really, of what you've already done. What's new in the land of Garnet, Michael Schulhauser?
Well, everything in book three is new and different from the first two books. But it is a continuation, really, of my adventures and my contact with Albert. But in book three, he took me on a whole new set of adventures, totally different from what I described in my second book. And it's all very interesting. And I was very happy to have those adventures and very happy to write about them. It's all brand new. It's not a repeat of anything in the first two, but it is, in fact, a continuation. It's like a sequel to the first two books.
And that's kind of like what I figured, you know. It would really be quite pointless for Albert to take you on the same journeys again because it's all about development. You know, I can remember in my last podcast, I just totally went paranormal investigator on you. I had to know why things were a certain way with Albert. And to me, it seemed an awful lot like he chose you for a reason. Where did he bring you this time?
Well, he took me our first trip this time was basically back to the spirit side, where I had another meeting with the Council of Wise Ones, a very brief meeting. And the Council of Wise Ones, as I mentioned in my show with you last year, is a committee of sort of very wise and advanced souls whose job it is to oversee all the incarnations on our planet. And so there, I got a short message from the chair of that council, Sophia, who said that, like she had told me before, and I described in my second book, she said, you know, the council's not very happy with the progress that humans are making in terms of discarding their negative emotions and embracing love and compassion. And because too many humans let their negative emotions like fear, anger, hate, and greed rule too much of their lives, that results in a lot of violence and conflict on our planet, and it causes problems for Mother Earth, and it causes problems for the other animals who share our planet. So it was really sort of an admonishment that I needed to sort of get at spreading the message that they had given to me before and try to make sure that more and more humans heard the message and try to change their ways, to try to climb out of the pit of darkness and see the light about where they should be going in terms of their planet and the other creatures on our planet. So it was sort of a short message from them. And then the next stop was to, we left the spirit side and Albert took me to an aquarium in California. And there I had a conversation with an orca, a killer whale.
Oh, I got to stop you right there, Garnett, because my wife, her absolute favorite animal on the planet is orcas. She loves orcas. And I don't know if you've ever seen the documentary Blackfish before, but this documentary was actually about Tilikum, the killer whale that's in captivity. And let me tell you, it wasn't a very happy story. I got a feeling this orca whale probably never had a whole lot of positive things to tell you, did he?
No, it was actually a female. Her name was Yolanda. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen that documentary, but I've heard about it. But anyway, yeah, her story was probably not much different. She was basically, she said to me, you know, look at, you know, whales were intelligent, sensitive, emotional creatures. We communicate with each other by telepathy. And all we want to do is just live in peace and harmony with our planet and all the other creatures, including humans. And she said that they were very dismayed at the treatment that they have been receiving, whales and dolphins and a lot of other creatures, at the hands of humans over the last few centuries. You know, when, you know, whales have been hunted and killed by whaling ships, you know, they get snarled in our traps and nets, they get imprisoned in water parks, and they get poisoned by the pollution we dump into our oceans. And so it's been a very sort of abusive relationship. They don't understand why we do it. They just want to live in peace and harmony with us, as I said. And she really had a sad tale. She said, you know, she was born in the Pacific, freely roaming in the Pacific, until she was, it was wonderful because that's what they're designed to do, to roam freely in the oceans. And then she was caught by humans, put in this concrete prison, and forced to perform silly tricks for a bunch of spectators who didn't seem to care about her plight. And so she was very upset at that. All she wanted was to be freed, go back into the ocean, where she can frolic in the blue waters of the Pacific. where she came from, and she really wanted me to take her message back to my fellow humans through my book, to implore them to set her and all the other workers free and stop abusing them, you know. So it was really a sort of a sad tale of woe from this beautiful creature who was very sensitive and compassionate, I really wanted to do my best to try to take her message, you know, back to my fellow humans, and hopefully something good can be done. And I heard, coincidentally, in the news recently, I think that there was some mention of a water park in California where they were going to change the way they were dealing with orcas. I don't know if you heard that or not, Jonathan.
Yes, I did, actually. It was actually global news because as of, I believe, the end of this summer, they'll no longer be breeding whales in captivity. That's what that news actually was. And that, of course, has spawned from SeaWorld, really, and a lot of other places around the world that do hold these large mammals. Really, these just gigantic blackfish, they keep them in small enclosures, and it's just not healthy. So they've decided that they'll no longer be raising them in captivity. Whether or not they'll be keeping them actually at the water parks, I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, it sounds like they haven't taken the final step of just saying, we're going to release all of our captive orcas into the ocean. Maybe they'll get there at some point, but that is a good first step, though, in not having, you know, new babies born in captivity where they spent their whole life in a concrete prison, you know. And so that's a very positive step. So anyway, that was one of the stops that Albert did, first stops that he took me to see. And then he also showed me a number of other scenes of how humans abuse animals on our planet. I don't want to get into in detail because we don't have much time in the show, but it's all detailed in my book. But then, to my surprise, one of the biggest surprises was that he took me to a cavern underneath the North Pole, Jonathan, where I actually had a conversation with the consciousness of Mother Earth. Her name is Gaia.
Ah, Gaia herself.
So, surprisingly, a lot of people have surmised that our planet has its own consciousness. I found out for sure that, yes, it does. A very kind, intelligent consciousness of, you know, a lady who's basically the sum total of everything on our planet, all the rivers and oceans and mountains and rocks and deserts. That's all her. And she's fiercely protective of all of her flora and fauna. And she wants to protect her environment to make sure that they can thrive as they always have thrived. And she was very concerned about how humans have now intervened sort of into the whole mix. And over the last while, they've really stepped up their pollution of Mother Earth. And they've also stepped up, you know, the abuse of the other animals on our planet. She was very distressed at this, and she really wanted me to, again, take the message back to my fellow humans to say, you guys got to stop abusing the animals, and you have to stop the pollution of the place you live, because otherwise it's going to turn out very badly for you. And so she was really saying, you know, you made a lot of progress in the last few years in curtailing your pollution, but you need to do better than that. And she said, and here's a big surprise, she said, you know, I have a way of fighting back. She says, I can actually, if I choose, increase the intensity and frequency of natural disasters on the planet, like earthquakes, hurricanes, volcanoes, droughts, floods. And she said she has been doing a bit of that lately because she wants to shoot a shot across our bow to wake us up and make us realize that if we don't change our ways, things go very bad for this planet. And she doesn't want that to happen. She's not vindictive, doesn't dislike humans. She just wished we weren't so abusive and so invasive in terms of being the dominant species on the planet. And she, you know, she recalled the good old days back when, you know, we lived in the Stone Age. She said humans were fine. They didn't cause any pollution. They didn't cause any major disruptions to the other wildlife, and things went along rosily until, of course, we had the Industrial Revolution, and we've rapidly developed a lot of advanced technology, which gives us even greater power to affect our environment and to affect the animals on the planet. So she's really hoping that we can sort of change our ways before it was too late.
Yeah, you know, right away I got to ask more questions about running in. Really, would you consider her a spirit?
She is. She's a spirit. She's the consciousness of Mother Earth. So she's a spirit, not quite the same way that you and I are, but she's got a consciousness. She's got a exists beyond the physical molecules of the planet, but she's very much of a part of it. So I didn't get into details of exactly how she fit into the whole scheme of things, but she's clearly a spirit. She's an entity of energy that happens to be the one that sort of surrounds our planet and tries to look after the well-being of our Earth. And so that's who she is.
So interesting. You know, one of my favorite parts in your past books, because I did read both of them, by the way, because you sent them to me so kindly. One of the things I really loved was when you were talking about the Akashic Records. Now, I don't know if you get into that at all in your new book, but this idea where all the knowledge of our history is stored. Did you get a chance to go back there just out of curiosity this time?
Yes, I did. Yeah, I did go back to the Akashic Records. And one of the things he showed me there was actually very interesting, because I had, like in my second book, I had described where he gave me a brief preview of my life review, where he showed me a few segments of my current life, where there were some lessons that I should have learned or I would learn now by watching them. And I saw, a few scenes from the life of Jesus and some other people in the Akashic Records. That's in my second book. In my third book, he took me back to the Akashic Records because I had said to him, have humans on this planet always been so mired in negative emotions like our current civilization? And he said, no, there have been other human civilizations that don't exist anymore that have lived in peace and harmony with their environment and with each other. And so he took me to the Akashic Records to show me, this you'll find interesting, Jonathan.
Yeah.
He showed me a human civilization that lived among the dinosaurs 65 million years ago.
Weird, because that doesn't line up at all.
The archaeologists, of course, tell us that there weren't any humans around back then because they haven't discovered any remains. But he showed me that there actually was one. It was a small civilization, lived in a walled city, and this was in Central America. And they had a very sort of a simple life, close to nature. They had no technology, but they lived in a very sort of equal society where men and women were equal in every respect, where they shared the child rearing and the cleaning and cooking and hunting duties. And they lived very close to nature, didn't pollute the planet, and they respected the wildlife. They killed only what they needed to eat and for, skins for clothing, and there was no waste. And so they're very respectful of their surroundings, very respectful of each other. They understand that they were connected to the source and to each other. And so they had no crime or violence. So it was a very idyllic sort of society. And I actually saw, I'm watching on the, in the Akashic Records, they have these big holographic globes where Albert will zero in on the various scenes he wants me to see. So I saw one hunting party expedition from this civilization where they went creeping through the tall grass and ended up hunting and killing a Hadrosaurus with their spears, which they quickly cut into chunks and then placed on poles and scurried back to their walled city. And they got there just before a T-Rex that was on the hunt caught up with them, and they got behind their high walls, and the T-Rex had to go away and find something else to eat. So it was very interesting. Unfortunately, this civilization didn't survive, not through any fault of their own, because shortly after I saw the scene that I did, Albert told me that an asteroid crashed into the Yucatan Peninsula, and it kicked up a bunch of volcanoes all over the world, which spewed smoke and dust, and it ended up with our planet basically had a nuclear winter for a couple of 3 years. That ended up destroying most of the dinosaurs, and this civilization, this community, their little walled city, was buried under several hundred meters of lava. That's why nobody's been able to find it. But he said there it was, and it was a nice civilization. He said he wished that they had continued on, because maybe today our civilization would be much different if we had sort of followed on their footsteps, but they were sort of completely wiped out. And then sometime later, he said the ETs seeded another group of humans later several eons later, they seeded humans again, because the first one was just totally destroyed. So we are not direct descendants from that civilization because they were all destroyed, but we are descendants from newly seeded humans that the ETs brought along much later.
So tell me a little tiny bit about these ETs who've seeded us. You've mentioned that before on my podcast. We didn't get a whole lot into it last time because I was more interested really in learning about Albert. But now I'm more interested in about the information And I just got to know, tell me a little tiny bit about what you know about the extraterrestrial influence here on this planet. From what I gather, what you talk a lot about in your book is that they've seeded us. They don't necessarily interfere too much, but they basically seeded us and they kind of watch over us and check back every now and then, which would explain actually a lot of abductions as well as, just really sightings of UFOs. Tell us a little tiny bit about the extraterrestrial influence on our planet.
Yeah, Albert says that there's been a number of very advanced races, not just one, but dozens of them, who have been visiting Earth right since the beginning of time. And they come and they go and they watch and then they come back. And they were instrumental in seeding humans on the planet. And Albert says they've had to do this a couple of times because a number of our civilizations have just totally perished. And so they have to sort of restart the experiment. And they come from various planets in our galaxy. They're basically directed in terms of the seeding of life on Earth by a committee, sort of a federation called the Galactic Council, a federation of sort of all the advanced ET races in the galaxy. And once the Galactic Council finds a planet that's suitable to harbor life, then they will organize some of these ET races that have warp drive and faster than light travel to bring life from one planet to Earth to sort of get it going. So they seeded a lot of the animal and plant life on Earth, and they've seeded humans as well. And they are, you're right, as I mentioned in my second book, they sort of plant the life here, and then they're sort of directed to sort of let things play out as they will, even though sometimes it turns out badly. And so they've had to watch when some of the previous human civilizations that we're aware of, like Lemuria and Atlantis, where they've risen up to great heights and then just destroyed themselves. They crashed and burned. And these ETs were not able to, because of their terms of reference, weren't able to step in and interfere. So they have to they give us guidance whenever they can. They try to help us in a technological sense, but they can't just sort of directly step in and say, okay, humans, we're gonna stop all your violence. We're gonna stop all your wars. We're going to destroy all of your weapons. They'd like to do that, but they're not allowed to do that. And so they have to sort of let it play out. And that's why we've had so many wars and so much violence, and we still do today. And they're watching us as we're getting to a point that's very close to where Atlantis and Lemuria were before they crashed and burned. And they're hoping we don't do the same, but they can't sort of get in and fix everything for us. So it's been a very interesting relationship. Albert says that the pace of observations by the ETs has really picked up since humans split the atom in World War II, and that sort of indicated to them, like, oh, these humans already have made a major step in the technological ladder, and we need to sort of pay more attention to them. But again, they are not allowed to just step in and destroy all of our nuclear weapons, which would be a good idea, but they can't do that. So, they've been watching us, they've been helping us, and they've been seeding life, and so they're very benevolent. There are no bad ETs that come to our planet. They're all good. They have all good intentions, and they really want us to win this battle. And they're observing us and they're cheering us on. They've decided that it's not appropriate at this time yet to make open direct contact with humans. But Albert says that in the future, and he wouldn't say when, in the future they will have open contact with us.
It seems like we got to get to a certain extent or a certain point before they'll kind of interject. You know, one thing that really fascinates me about that whole idea, the idea that we were seeded, was that, my God, there must be millions, and I mean millions, of other planets out there where these ETs maybe doing the same thing they've done here. So that's a really cool idea, that the idea that we're not alone in the universe. You talked before in your previous books about astral projection. And I will, of course, want to elaborate with you a little bit about that first before I ask some heavier questions about that process. But can you tell me what it's actually like, Garnett? What's the feeling you get when you actually do this astral projection? You know, to me, it's so foreign and so out there, because I don't even remember my dreams, to be honest with you. I can't imagine what it must be like to go and explore. What's the feeling when you take Albert's hand and you go? What is that feeling like?
Well, once my astral body is out of my physical body, it just feels like I have, like, basically no weight. Like, there's nothing, that there's no matter. I'm not composed of matter anymore. It just feels like I'm a body of energy, and I have no weight, and I can just just pass through walls and ceilings and hard objects just like they weren't even there. It was a very different feeling, obviously, because I spent all my life in a physical body where if you bump into a wall, you can hurt yourself. You know, as an astral traveler, nothing like that gets in the way. You can just, you're basically like you're floating. And the other thing that's interesting is that you can move from one place to another almost instantaneously. And I didn't know how to do this, how to maneuver myself, but Albert was there with me, and he would just sort of say, okay, you want to go here, and it's sort of like snap your fingers and there you are. So it's almost like instantaneous travel. You travel through the power of thought. So you can get anywhere really rapidly, very quickly. And so it was quite an amazing experience. And of course, when I'm in astral form and Albert's showing me things on our planet, the people in physical form can't see me or Albert. They just can't see us, and so we can sort of hang around and we can watch what's happening on Earth, and the people there aren't even aware that we're there. And so it's a very much of you can sort of have a sneak peek on what's happening in other people's lives without them being aware that you're watching them. So it's kind of an interesting way to travel. And and on the spirit side, everyone there is in their natural form as a being of energy. So no one there has anything physical about them, and there's no need to eat, drink, breathe, or do any of those things. And they are just basically like I was in astral form, and that's sort of the natural existence for all souls, is to be beings of energy. And so with my astral travels, I got to have a temporary feeling of what that is like. But then after every trip, Albert would bring me back to my home, and I would slip back into my physical body, and then I'd wake up, and guess what? I'm guarded and the human again in physical form. So it was really really quite a contrast between the two.
Absolutely. And as you're telling me this, all I can think about is Dickens. I can think about Ebenezer Scrooge being taken by his ghosts of his past to look back on his old life. And I think about that, and it leads me to a very interesting question that I don't think anybody's ever asked you before in any of the podcasts I've heard you on, Garnet. Are you the only one? Are you the only man in history who's had this wonderful spirit guide take you on these adventures and shown you these things? It seems to me like it's a constructive idea. The idea that you are having these guides take you places so that you can relay the messages, whether it's in your book or even on these podcasts. Are you the only one, Garnet?
That I don't know. I asked Albert if there were other people, and he declined to comment. But I suspect that there have been other people who have been astral traveling, and maybe not quite in the same fashion that I have. But the bottom line is that, Jonathan, every one of us astral travels at night when we sleep, except we're not usually allowed to remember those trips. So we all do it. And some people sort of remember bits and pieces, and they think it's a dream. Other people are, have more cogent memories of their astral trips. There's been other guys like, Robert Monroe wrote several books, and he developed a technique to astral travel on his own. And he just developed this over a period of years, and he's gone to very many interesting places. He's dead now, but he wrote some books on this. And so that's one example of where somebody has done it. And I expect there's other people who've also done it, probably many people who do it and don't really want to admit that they have, because they might feel that other people will think they're losing their mind or going crazy. So it's I'm pretty sure there's other people who do it. Albert just didn't want to get into it, but I know that he has a lot of knowledge about that, and someday he'll probably tell me. But anyway, I don't think I'm unique. I think other people have done it.
Yeah, and it kind of lends to this idea, as an EVP researcher, my thing is investigating the paranormal and searching for the voices of what I'm led to believe are coming from another dimension of space that we're not aware of. This whole idea that when we pass away, our spirit can be trapped in a building or even stuck here on this plane. Did Albert give you any kind of indication, as just for the whole ghost hunting people out there who like listening to my podcast, okay? Is there anything he passed on about your spirit when you pass on? Is there anything, any information you can relay there at all as to what might be going on?
Well, in terms of ghosts, it's very interesting because there's a chapter in my third book about my visitation with a spirit, which some people would have called a ghost. And it arose because I was watching a paranormal TV broadcast where there was ghost hunters trying to track down a ghost in a haunted house. And so I asked Albert about that, and he said, oh, well, come on, I'll show you. So we actually went to this very same house in England, this mansion, where the ghost hunters had been trying to detect the spirit. And there, because I'm in astral form, of course, I can see the spirit of the ghost of this person who was haunting this house. And she was a lady who had died violently. She and her husband and children had lived in that house. And she had surprised a burglar one night when her husband was away. And the burglar had stabbed her to death, violent, brutal death. And her spirit was so upset that she didn't quite realize that her physical body had passed on. And she didn't want to believe that she was dead. She wanted to hang around to make sure she could look after her children. And so she was in a confused state for a while. And she hung around the house, and she ignored her spirit guides who had come to sort of take her by the hand and take her back to the spirit side. She refused to sort of acknowledge them for a period, and she would do things open and close doors and bang cupboard doors and turn lights on off and on. And she was doing that to try to scare away the people who had purchased her house after she and her kids had moved out or she'd passed away. And she was trying to scare them away with the view that perhaps then her children could go back to live with her in the house. So she was just a confused spirit who hadn't quite realized the reality of the fact that she had physically died and she needed to move on to the spirit side. And so as I watched, her guides finally moved in and sort of smothered her in gentle hugs of love and basically convinced her that she was a spirit, her physical body had died, she needed to move on to the spirit side and get on with her evolution as a soul. And they actually sort of escorted her out of the house and back to the spirit side. So Albert says that is often what happens when people say there's ghosts or the houses are haunted. It's probably because there's a confused spirit who's hanging around and isn't quite ready to cross over to the spirit side. But no one is ever left there forever. You're never trapped on this plane. You're never trapped in a house because your guides are always there to eventually take you by the hand and lead you to safety. Like a house could be haunted for 200 years by the same spirit, because 200 years on the spirit side is just a blink of an eye. They don't have linear time. So he said that happens often when you have hear about a house that's haunted, or people see a ghostly apparition, and that's just probably what it is. It was very interesting.
Yeah, that is really interesting, because that's what I'm into. That's my cup of tea, so to speak. And it's interesting to hear that, they even on the other side, where you think that this may be completely different, they're given the same explanations that we have on Earth. Speaking of paranormal, shall we say, superstars. I think a ghost is like a paranormal superstar. You mentioned that you actually ran into two, what was the word? I believe you used the word legendary creatures.
Fabled creatures, yes.
Yeah, tell me a little tiny bit about that, Garnett, because as soon as you said Ireland, the first thing that popped in my mind was, oh boy, St. Patrick's Day. Did you run into a leprechaun?
In Ireland, I actually got to meet one of the Emerald Isle's fabled little people. She was a fairy. A little fairy, and Albert took me to a secluded meadow in Ireland, and all of a sudden he went behind a clump of bushes, and out he came holding the hand of this beautiful little fairy. She was about 3 feet tall. She looked like a tiny, perfect China doll, just exquisite. And her name was Brina, and we communicated by telepathy. She said that, fairies are very, very real. The little people of Ireland are very real. She says that they have to hide underground now because of humans, because the humans above ground are violent and aggressive, and they want to avoid us. And she said that before humans arrived on that island, the fairies were able to roam freely above ground and frolic in the sunlight. But when humans came and they realized how violent and aggressive we were, they were forced to hide in underground cities, which is where they have been to date. They come out at night once in a while. Sometimes they were spotted by humans, but only rarely. And she lamented the fact that, they really wanted to come back out on the surface again, but they wouldn't dare do so as long as humans were in their current state of affairs. And she said if humans could ever see the light and discard their violence, then they would, the fairies would hope they would be able to live in peaceful coexistence with them once again. So very interesting. It just goes to show you that when there's legends that have been passed down, from father to son and mother to daughter over the centuries, there's usually some truth to those legends. They weren't made up out of the blue sky. There's usually something to them, some substance. And so she was a good example of, yeah, here we are. We live on this planet, but we have to stay in hiding because we're afraid of humans. So it was really an unfortunate story on her part, and hopefully someday they will be able to come out on the surface and frolic in the sunlight once again.
And I gotta ask, who's the second? What was the second creature or legendary animal you ran into? Because, boy, I tell you, I did not expect you to say fairy. That must have been in Ireland, right? Am I right in saying that? Yes.
It was Ireland, yes.
Nice.
Ireland.
Okay, I got
to... It was a fairy in Ireland. Okay, the other legendary fabled creature was a Sasquatch.
Oh, this is going to be great, because you know what? I've had so many questions about this guy, because in my mind, we should have caught him by now. So.
Well, let me tell you, it was in Albert took me. It was in a forest in the Pacific Northwest of the U.S.,
Yep.
And there I was introduced to a Sasquatch, and again, it was a female. Her name was Zanna, and she was about 9 feet tall. She had sort of kind of like an ape-like head, and her muscular body was covered in dark brown hair. And again, we communicated by telepathy. She was a very intelligent, sensitive creature. And she says that, again, like the fairies, the Sasquatch has been in hiding for the longest time because they are afraid of humans. They view us as violent and aggressive, and that we're just basically bad news, and they don't want to have any contact with us, which is why they haven't been caught or openly exposed. And they live in underground cities, and they come out usually only at night. But the key thing for them to help avoid detection is that she said they have what she calls sort of like an animal-sensitive radar, and that allows them to detect humans from many miles away, long before humans are even in eyesight. And she says this allows them to hide when humans are around. And of course they populate the remote forests of the world. She says they live in all the continents except Antarctica, so they're also known as Yeti and Bigfoot and abominable snowmen and all those names, but they're basically, it's all the same creature just living in remote parts of the world, and again, so they can avoid contact with humans. And she said that their species originated in Africa many centuries ago as a result of the a now extinct primate that lived on Earth was inseminated with the sperm from a race of humanoid extraterrestrials, and that resulted in their species, which has been carried on since then. And so she's saying, like the fairy, she's saying, I wish humans would clean up their act, stop being so aggressive and abusive, so that we can come out from hiding and live together in harmony. And that's all they want. But in the meantime, they don't want to have anything to do with us because we're just bad news.
Wow. So far, this podcast has touched on just about everything paranormal. It really is a paranormal potpourri here tonight on the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. But Garnet, I always got to ask the tough questions too. And I can imagine that by now, I'm sure you've run into 100 people who love what you do, but you run into a lot of hard-nosed skeptical people as well. What do you say to people who are skeptical of your story?
Well, all I can say is that there's no way I can prove that I speak to my spirit guide. No way I can prove that I have one. I can't prove that I've been astral traveling, not in any scientific sense, not by any methods that's recognized by the scientific community. And I said, but most of the other people who have these experiences, the people who have NDEs, the doctor who wrote Proof of Heaven and the little boy who was the subject of that book called Heaven is for Real, and all the other books written about NDEs, and there's been tons of them. None of those people can prove that they actually left their body and went over to the spirit side and then came back again. So I'm not concerned about the skeptics. I say to them, you can believe whatever you want to believe, but at the end of the day, when we're both dead, we will both know who was telling the truth. And if you want to believe what you want to believe right now, then go ahead, that's your right.
Yeah, that is a really interesting take on it. And I ask that because, as you know, I'm into the paranormal. I get that question a lot. And I'm probably going to get it a lot this weekend coming up at Sci-Fi and the Rock number 10. So I'll be getting that a lot as well. Garnet, I know our time is starting to draw very close to an end, but I got to ask, is there any message you'd like to relay on the people out there right now who listen to this podcast, fans of my podcast who've been listening for years? I know they're excited to have you back, and they know this is a continuation. First and foremost, I'm sure you want these people to pick up your book. This is important. We got to get that out there. Garnet, where can people find your latest book?
Well, the best source of information is on my website, Jonathan, which is garnetschulhauser.com. That's hard to remember, but if the people Google dancing on a stamp, they can get to my website. And there are buy links on my site to all the popular online stores like Amazon and Chapters Indigo and Barnes & Noble and all the other ones. And so if you just click on any of those logos, you'll get right to the place where you can buy it. There's a lot of bricks and mortar stores that have my books. It's sort of hit and miss, depends on what the managers want to order. But if your favorite bricks and mortar store doesn't have them, they can certainly order them for you. So I encourage everyone to, you know, to read about my adventures with Albert. You know, you mentioned the first two books. The third one is just coming out, and so it's now available. And you know, I've had a lot of compliments about my books. I encourage your listeners to read them, and if they have any questions or if they have any comments, my email address is on my website, and I'd be happy to hear from them.
Garnet, do you have any passing message to relay on to the other people out there who are listening to this podcast right now, straight from the horse's mouth, so to speak, which would probably be Albert's in your case?
Well, you know, Albert has told me quite often, he said, you know, you're on a spiritual journey in a human body, okay? You're a spirit having a human journey. And he says, you know, you need to lighten up and not take life so seriously, because you're on an adventure here that you chose for yourself before you were born. And so no matter what happens to you, no matter how many mistakes you make, no matter how many wrong turns you make, you can't go wrong and become lost. You always end up back on the spirit side, no matter what you do here, back to the place you came from, back to your true home. And so he said you should just smile at everyone you meet, laugh a lot, and recognize that you're always going to end up back in a beautiful place. And so enjoy your adventure.
To every day is an adventure, Garnet. I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast again, my friend. And I can't wait for book number 4 to come out. I don't know, I'm let alone book number 3. Because then I get to have my good friend Garnet Schulhauser back again.
Yeah, and if you'd like a review copy of book 3, Jonathan, just send me an email with your address and I'll have my publisher send you one. And in terms of book 4, book 4 is about 75% of the way through. It's a sequel to the first 3 with more adventures with Albert. So I don't know when that's coming out. It depends on when I finish it, but it's in progress.
The last 2 books you gave me, I read them both. And my highest compliment I can give you is that I passed them on to my mother-in-law as soon as I was finished reading them, because I know she loves angels and those kinds of stories. So there you have it, folks. If you're into astral projection, if you're into just knowing things about the paranormal, a different view, a view from an astral projector, Mr. Garnet Schulhauser, thanks again for being on the Odd Newfoundland.
Thank you for having me, Jonathan. I look forward to the next show.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at ODDTONFLD. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast, as well as the ever-popular parajoke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu. From the Odd Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.